Following is a Journey into Comics Network production.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's the Podfather Nate here. This is the Journey into Comics Network Best of the Week show. Highlights from all of the shows that have released this week on our network for you to get a taste of everything that we've got going on. Sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Journey into Comics. Here on today's show, we're going to be covering Zachary Levi has been announced to play Shazam.
So I want to tell you about this, Brando. And let me say, it's funny with the Zachary Levi thing because if you'll remember, someone else was being courted as the person who was going to be playing Shazam against Black Adam in the DC Universe. Obviously, Black Adam is The Rock. So there was a lot of talk that John Cena was going to get the role of Shazam. It just made sense. John Cena versus The Rock, it's kind of a thing. I mean, only once in a lifetime, twice. Might as well make it three times, you know? But I guess that something happened at Warner Brothers. They released an official statement saying that they couldn't see John Cena at all because you can't see him in the role of Shazam. So he's not in as Shazam. However, Zachary Levi is going to take and do this character. I'm interested, man. I don't really know a lot of Zachary Levi's work, but I feel like he looks good as like a possible character. I think nowadays in the different cinematic universe movies, it's so hard to even judge when someone gets cast because you just don't know. Even as Jared Leto's Joker, and everybody was like, Jared Leto could play a great Joker. It could be amazing. And then, like, you looked at him, and it was just like, uh-oh. Like, we're doomed. And anyways, I digress. I think this casting could be really great. I hope that the Shazam movie actually happens. I really worry if DC stumbles, and there's some stuff we're going to talk about here in a minute about what's going on in the DC world that is weird to me. Do you know what Zachary Levi's done? Is there anything I should note in my mind from his filmography?
Offhand, no. I would have to look it up, to be honest with you. But I do have a statement that he posted on Instagram. Sure. And he says, honored and greatly humbled to be a part of the hashtag DC Universe by bringing the original Captain Marvel to life. He was, of course, referring to Shazam by the character's original name before DC Comics changed it to Shazam to avoid confusion and legal battles with the Marvel Comics character of the same name. I am beside myself with gratitude, and not only for this opportunity, but also the incredible outpouring of love and support from many of you out there in the world. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll be in the gym for the rest of forever. this was, like you said, it was kind of out of like left field. For this, you know, because I'm actually looking up on IMDb right now to see, because I want to say he has been in some stuff. And look at that. He was in Chuck. He was in the TV show Chuck. I don't know if you ever watched that. He was in Tangled. He was in Thor the Dark World.
Actually, I just saw when you pulled that up, the Thor the Dark World credit. He was one of the Warriors Three. I think it was Fangrel. So he's dabbled in both Marvel and DC now. DC giving him a much larger role.
He played Ronald McDonald in Robot Chicken.
Ooh, Ronald McDonald, that's a cool role. In Robot Chicken. Fandral, yeah, okay, cool. As you said, he was Chuck in Chuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess so.
Okay, so he is Chuck. We are Groot. This is a, Brandon, we're almost at the point in our podcast where I can make the hilarious, I feel terrible that I just smudged the glass. Caitlin's going to be like, what is this from? And it was a podcast. The answer is.
It was because of that movie's name.
Because of Wieners. He was in a movie called Wieners.
Yeah.
Control Z. Interesting. Big Mama's House 2. Ugh. So he doesn't have a ton of credits, but some of the stuff he's done is good. He's been a actor, looks like, since 2001, 2002-ish. So he's got it, and I love that he said he's going to be in the gym for forever because Shazam is stacked. But speaking of Thor and DC and Justice League, it's kind of like it's all there wrapped into itself. It looks like Thor Ragnarok is going to kick some major ass at the box office. They're predicting it's like, what, up to 125 million weekend debut?
Yeah, that's what I heard. Apparently, Thor Ragnarok has already started airing in international markets where it's already hauled in 12.8 million.
Damn. Fat cash. That's a okay preview night number. So I'm really looking forward to this movie. I've said it 100 times on this podcast. It's there was something about it when I saw the trailers that just from the cinematography alone was like, this movie's different. There's something different about it. How it's shot's different. Visually, it looks different. The graphics are a little bit different. 80% of the movie, I don't know if you know this, 80% was fully improv'd. Because the Taika Waititi, I think that's his name, he's the director, he's very much like that. He wants to see the best in actors, but sometimes the best in actors is just who they are as a person. So he encouraged Chris Hemsworth to bring that goofy, hilarious, comedic side of him and not be this stiff Norse god, you know, and full of like, you know, if you think about the first Thor movie, it's like them trying to recite a Norse play. You know, so this is a departure. I'm really looking forward to this, Brandon. What do you think about the numbers with Thor Ragnarok?
You know, I think it'll do pretty well. And when we were talking about the whole DC stuff, apparently Justice League is now they're predicting an opening weekend box office of 105 to 110, which is around where Spider-Man hit. I want to say is about 111 or whatever it was, which is pretty damn good. But it is less, far less than BVS. And is a little above or around the market of Wonder Woman. It's funny how we refer to these numbers as if like, oh, well, then it's not doing good. But really, it's like it's doing good, but you think about how much money they spend on the damn movie. Another thing to note, though, is that DC has not yet started the big last-minute market haul because they probably want to get past Thor. Once Thor's out of the way, Now you're gonna start seeing TV spots everywhere. You're gonna be seeing radio. You're gonna see this movie everywhere. Every time you load a YouTube video, okay, you're gonna see Justice League. There, so that may skew the numbers, but if that movie comes out that first weekend, of course we're saying opening weekend. So we're not saying overall. We're saying opening weekend. And right now, DC has got to prove themselves. They did so with Wonder Woman, and we've said it here before, but with the misstep with BVS and Suicide Squad, this movie has to come out, and it has to be spread of word of mouth. This is actually worth to go see in theaters. And then you're going to see a potential, well, there might be some more to be made on the second week or the third week. People going, okay, you know what, maybe I will go and not wait till Redbox or, you know, big, you know, get it on video somewhere. So that's what I think. Does Thor Ragnarok have the capability of beating it? Absolutely. Absolutely, like they do, because here we are, even though the other two Thor movies really aren't probably worth it to say that they would be in contention for that, the other Marvel movies in general have been really good lately. So with this movie coming out and it already looking very good and it's reviewing very good, people are going to be like, okay, well, this is a safe bet. I can go see this movie and be entertained and have it not be a complete pile of shit. So, with that being said, it's a very logical possibility that Thor is just going to go and like outperform it.
So I'm going to ask a weird question here. With that, if it outperforms Justice League, let's just take a random bullshit ass chance gamble and say that Justice League pulls in 107.3 mil. And Thor Ragnarok does like 124. That's conservative, a little bit on the low side, right? So if that were to happen, does that almost, and I know it's hard to even say this because it's so weird how everything is happening in the universe of movies and comic books and all this. Do you think at that point we're at a juncture where DC's almost backpedaling going, well, maybe we need to rethink everything and scrap and start again? Because, listen, first Thor, the mystique of, oh my God, we're going to see a Thor movie. People rush and go see it in theaters, okay? And it's not a bad movie. It's not an amazing movie. It's kind of somewhere it rides the middle. It's not the best Marvel product. Then you have Thor 2, again, another number one movie that Marvel released. They're on a roll. They've released so many number ones. That's one of them. But it wasn't a very memorable movie. There's not a lot of things you can even remember in that movie other than there's some weird blood-looking shit, right? This movie is like a Thor movie that everyone who's a Thor fan wants to see. amplified by people who are already interested in the Chris Hemsworth personality. So when they see his personality on screen, it's like, oh, this could be like a buddy comedy, a buddy cop movie. So I'm just curious, do you think this could signal a desperate change for DC?
I don't know about that, because I feel like they're already so far into going forward with the Batman stuff and with the other with Aquaman and stuff like that. I don't think so. It's too late for them to just pull off course completely. But with what you're saying, though, with the Thor, I really think that the product of this movie that we're going to see, it's there and it's that interesting. And because Thor has been made more interesting by his appearance in the Avengers movies, that has really shaped this character, unlike his own movies, where the focus is entirely on him. They haven't really been that interesting. But when he can joke and be buddy-buddy with Stark and with Captain and with all these guys and be there and be involved, he's part of a mass. And so people go there and go, yeah, dude, Thor was awesome in that movie. So when they go see this and they see, oh, he's teaming up with the Hulk. Well, okay, let's go, because Hulk doesn't, you know, we haven't seen Hulk for a while. You know, I think, like, this movie is doing, if it were just a straight-up Thor movie, it may not be as interesting as the story that they decided to go with. So, with that being said, like, we're gearing towards a very interesting, fall and holiday season, because we have these two big comic book movies coming out in November, and then they're both going to get stomped by Star Wars, because even though, you know, it might not even do as well as Force Awakens because of the big hype and the mystique and the wonder as Force Awakens. People went to go see that movie based on, I don't know. But now since the trailer has dropped for this, maybe it does do better, because now they're like, what are they doing with this? Wow, okay. So, very interesting into the year. Very exciting for us, because it's, you know, we like talking about this shit. So I'm just looking to see where we're at on time, because it's kind of hard for me to do. We're about 13 minutes into this segment. I don't know how much more we have left to talk about these things.
Well, I want to say one thing. I don't know this officially. There's a little Justice League news I want to end with, mixed with a little Thor news. We'll start with Thor because we were just there. So as far as Thor, have you heard what the rumored post-credit scene is? Do you know anything about this?
Was that the Guardians picking up his body?
I'm pretty sure that that's what is going to be. Don't quote me on that. I don't personally know that that's going to be the fact. It just, that would be the most sensible thing. Tonally, there's been a shift. It's a little bit more comedy. Now Thor's floating body is going to end up on the Milano. It'll be hilarious. Now on the flip side, some people in China have started to review Justice League and talk about it. They can't say too much because there's embargoes on the reviews. However, confirmed, someone put in a tweet, it was a little bit understated, you will see the power of a green light. So I don't know if that was maybe a post-credit scene or what they're doing there, how that's all going to come into play, but it looks like we're going to get a Green Lantern at some point in Justice League. I don't know how you're going to do that. I think the worrisome thing at the end of this here that I want to kind of close on is DC has all the powers of The Flash and Batman and Superman and Cyborg and Wonder Woman and now possibly Green Lantern and Aquaman, and it might not outperform a movie with two Marvel superheroes, you know. And then of course the dangerous question is, are DC going to be really smart and buy advertising on Marvel's movie so that Justice League plays before Thor? Because that's a smart thing to do. You have your audience right there. If they're going to get hooked, that's going to be the moment. Oh, I didn't even, first, I live in a fucking hole. I did not know there was a movie called Justice League coming out, you know? That's kind of what I feel like some people might be like. So I'm excited regardless. Like you said, it's a beautiful time for us as fans because there are a lot of great movies coming out. Next week, yes, for sure, next week we will be able to talk about the next Walking Dead issue comic book.
Yeah.
Because it will be out. We will be in November. No Shave November. I'm all ready.
You definitely got a clean start on that.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Poor Rapport. I am your host, Andrew Poor, and I want to thank you for joining me. Now, one thing that's kind of nice when you have a group of friends is that you get to do kind of a group-themed costume, or if you're in a relationship or have a partner, you can do a couple's costume. So on Friday night, went out to the bars in my area and had a little pre-gaming ahead of time, and a couple of my friends and I, we dressed up as the Scooby Gang, or the Mystery Gang. So I dressed up as Shaggy. So I had the green shirt, the brown pants, had the kind of the fluffed up Shaggy hair. My fiance was Velma, so I had the whole orange getup. Another friend of ours that's a couple, or a couple friends of ours, they were dressed up as Fred and Daphne, had the full white and the purple and all that. And one of my friends actually got a Scooby-Doo hoodie that, like, when you zip up and you put the hood down, it actually looks like the cartoon Scooby, which was pretty cool. And we took a picture of that, and I'll probably put it up on my Instagram later. It was just fun because it's kind of nice that you get to kind of do something as a group activity. You don't have to settle on doing something that's just unique, that just individual to you. It's something that you can kind of share with someone else, and it makes it more fun going into it. It's kind of like an accountability person. So I went out, I celebrated that, and kind of going to the bars on a Friday night. Sometimes, especially this time of year, you have people who do dress up, you have people who don't, and more often than not, a lot of places we went to were not dressed up, so we didn't really have that theme. One bar we did to go, there was a very dance-happy Spider-Man that was just bobbing and weaving and swing dancing. It was a little unusual for Spider-Man to do, but I guess if you're Spider-Man, swing dancing probably would be the dancing that you would like to do. So that was fun. And then Saturday, dressed up as Ron Swanson. So I went from full beard that I wear normally to a goatee, which I wore as Shaggy because I wanted to keep the mustache to use for Ron Swanson. So I'm in my red polo and black pants and my mustache for Ron Swanson on Saturday, and then my fiance dressed up as breakfast food because Ron Swanson loves a brunette with breakfast food, and that's who my fiance was. So that was fun again, and got to go to a house party and have some amazing sangria and beer pong and all that fun stuff you get to do. And it's kind of nice to, after a stressful week of work, to go out and just have a good time. And it was just made for a nice little Halloween. And I know on Friday, while we were kind of pre-gaming, hanging out at my apartment, we were watching Nightmare Before Christmas, which is kind of the debated movie. Is it more Halloween? Is it more Christmas? Is it good just to watch in between? I think it's more Halloween just because of the characters and the story and the amount of time you actually spend in the Halloween world. So that's kind of my views on it. I know some people think it's more of a Christmas movie because that was kind of the whole point of the story, is someone that wanted to find something different, so we found Christmas World and all that fun stuff. And it's a movie I haven't seen all that recently before then, so it was kind of nice to kind of rewatch that. And even though it wasn't directed by Tim Burton, it's still a very well done movie, and you see with all this claymation work that it took God knows how many hours to put all that together and make a movie. So I'm definitely, it's still a good classic movie to watch at Halloween time. And I guess at Christmas, too, you could always pull it out again. I definitely lean more towards Halloween, though. And I guess with that, I'll kind of dive into the news. And there's a lot of news to talk about today, some more depressing or sad than others. But I'll kind of dive right into it. Before I get into kind of the political or the big headline news, I kind of want to talk about the Linkin Park and Friends, the Chester Bennington tribute show they did at the Hollywood Bowl over the weekend. Now, it was the first concert that Linkin Park has done since Chester Bennington's death, so it was already pretty sad to begin with, and they streamed it live on YouTube, and they had countless people come from all over, and they had a lot of bands and people that were close to the band come. I know they had, I kind of have the list written down here, they had members of Yellow Card, Bush, Bring Me the Horizon, Machine Gun Kelly, Korn, A Day to Remember, Sum 41, System of a Down, Blink-182, Avenged Sevenfold, And they also did a big video tribute that featured U2, Paul McCartney, Duff McKagan, 30 Seconds to Mars, Dave Gahan, and Metallica. So they had that Linkin Park, which is a band I've loved. I got to see them live a couple years ago, and I'm thankful I got to see that with one of my best friend who I've always listened to Linkin Park in his car with, and it really got me into the band more than I did when I was growing up. So I think it's really nice they're able to do this tribute thing, and it's hard to say if Linkin Park will cease to exist moving forward. If it's just, it's hard to do Linkin Park without Chester Bennington's vocals, because they're very iconic and they're very appropriate to the song, and I can't imagine any of his hits or any of the band's hits that he was such a prominent part of and that his voice was so impactful on than some of their classics. I know they did, during the show, they played the song Numb, which is one of their biggest hits, and they didn't have a vocalist. They had the band up there, and they purposely left the vocalist position empty. They just had a beam of light with a mic, an empty mic stand with a wreath around it, because his voice was so impactful and so strong and passionate in that song, and there's just no one who can replace that. And it was hard to see that image, that video of them just playing without Chester. And I know in other songs they did that night, they had singers and other artists that I listed earlier fill in, but it's definitely not going to be the same. And I think it's going to be hard to move forward, but bands have done it before. Bands have brought in someone to kind of carry them through, but it's not going to be the same, and I honestly don't know where they're going to go forward with it. But I'm glad they're able to do this for the fans and for the people who loved Linkin Park and Chester Bennington, and my heart still goes out to his family who are still dealing with his loss, and his bandmates who've been like family to him his whole life. So, thanks for everything, Chester and Linkin Park, for being a big part of my life growing up. And I guess kind of directing from this into some more less than savory news. And this is actually, there's two bits of news that have dropped recently. Last week, George H.W. Bush Sr., who's a 93-year-old former president, recently came out. There were sexual assault allegations against him. The first was Heather Lind, who is an actress on that TV show on AMC Turn, Washington Spies. And her statement was that he touched her from behind and told her a dirty joke, and this all happened in front of George H.W. Bush's wife, Barbara. Apparently this happened 4 years ago. And those of you who've seen video either from the show I talked about last week, where they did the hurricane relief tribute, he's been in a wheelchair since his late 80s, so he's been there for about 5 years now. And when he does pictures, he kind of has to do them from the waist. And he's come out and apologized, and since this, since Heather Lind made a statement, three other women have come out and made similar allegations. And I actually have a statement that the spokesperson for the president, former president George W. Bush, had said, and it says, "At age 93, President Bush has been confined to a wheelchair for roughly 5 years, so his arm falls on the lower waist of people with whom he takes pictures. To try and put people at ease, the president routinely tells the same joke, and on occasion he has patted women's rears in what he intended to be a good-natured manner. Some have seen it as innocent, others clearly view it as inappropriate. To anyone he has offended, President Bush apologizes most sincerely." And in what I've seen recently, I don't even think George Bush can really speak much for himself. I think his, I don't know, he's 93, he's not definitely in the best of shape, and he didn't speak at the event last week, and in that video he did, he said, just said one word in that whole video, and that was thank you, and that was still kind of jumbled and not quite there. So I think he's not as communicative as he was even a few years ago. So it's hard. I'm a little conflicted on this because sexual allegations are no joking matter. They're very serious. At the same time, this is a 93-year-old man who may not have full understanding of what he's doing and how it's being construed. As anyone knows, a lot of people have older relatives who sometimes can say or do things that may not be maybe inappropriate and they wouldn't do, and maybe it's just that he's no longer in his right mind or has full control of his faculties in that regard. And being a former president, he's definitely in more spotlight as any celebrity or someone of well-known status is. So I think he's right for apologizing for these actions or what these actions have been construed as, even if that wasn't his intention. I think it's just best for him to kind of stay out of the spotlight and try and lay low. At his age, he's probably not going to be around too much longer. Like I said, he's not in a best state. He's wheelchair confined. Looks like he's missing some of his teeth. He's no longer really verbal. I honestly don't know how his future is going to be, but I don't want to see kind of his last couple years be tainted by this. But this is the same thing we saw earlier this summer with all the Bill Cosby allegations, stuff that he did at a young age, and now he's paying the price for it. And he also is older and is up there, and he's paying for crimes he'd commit then. But this is all stuff, at least as far as we know, that's happened very recently since he's been wheelchair bound and since he's been this. And it's might be that with everything that's been happening lately, people are more inclined to come out or people are thinking about this. But I'm not trying to say that what he did was okay, because it's not. I just hope we're able to move forward and he's able to kind of atone for what he did and make it right with those that have come forward.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
Since the last time we talked, they have completely, they have severed ties with Jeff Jarrett.
But not Karen.
Well, Jeff Jarrett and GFW are no longer in Impact Wrestling's future. Apparently, there was going to be a merger between GFW and Impact Wrestling, and it was going to become Global Force Wrestling presents Impact Wrestling. Like, the company was going to become Global Force Wrestling. The brand was going to be Impact. Well, that's not happening. They even had brand new Global Force Wrestling belts made to reflect the changes, but nothing was finalized on paper.
Well, if you don't got it in writing, you don't got it at all, my friend. And yeah. Are they going to go back to old belts then?
I don't know. From what I've seen, they have not yet done that because they have so many, they tape so many shows at once to cover up so many weeks of television that they haven't done that yet. Now, what I'm hearing is that, okay, so Impact is hosting Bound for Glory in Toronto this year, I think. It's up in Canada. And that will be the dawn of the new era of Impact Wrestling yet again. Now, Jeff Jarrett he was sent home from Anthem, who's the parent company of Impact and was going to be the parent company of Global Force. They were going to acquire Global Force from Jeff Jarrett. And Jeff Jarrett was a creative director. He was started off as just a consultant, and he kind of became a bigger deal again, like he used to be. And then I guess he got sent home due to some drunken shenanigans of some sorts, and then they announce this, and then they ask, you know, Jarrett says one thing about the whole deal, and he says on Twitter, Anthem is out of money.
Oh.
And that has been a rumor that Anthem has been looking to sell the Impact Wrestling brand that they acquired from Dixie Carter back in January.
They're going to end up selling it to Billy Corgan or WWE.
Well, Billy Corgan was already in a deal to purchase the NWA.
Oh, so he
that's been going on for months.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize he had given up his hopes on Impact once they ousted him and Dixie.
Yes, yes, that deal with ended in court, and it was a done deal. Then he set his sights elsewhere. The NWA is up for sale. He's looking at trying to turn the NWA into something. Haven't heard much about that in a long time, but that's the last thing I heard. That was months ago. Now, Anthem refuted Jeff and said, on the contrary, or no, they said, inaccurate was what they said. Inaccurate. We are looking forward to the Canadian tour dates for Impact Wrestling, blah, blah, blah. Then Jeff turns around and puts himself into rehab.
Weird.
And then Jeff's daughter from his first marriage posts of her as a little girl with Jeff from like the late 90s. And basically said that they are not on good terms right now, but she's very supportive of her dad in hopes that he saw the post, right?
Yeah.
And no matter what, that she loves him, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And then I don't know if she then later retweeted it or somebody posted something of somebody's like, huh, interesting. Yet another husband that Karen Jarrett has sent to rehab.
Jesus. Oh, no.
And then Jeff Jarrett's daughter retweeted it.
Oh, damn.
Oh, I'm like, damn, things are not good in the hood over there.
Shots fired.
So it sounds like that Impact, I've heard rumors of them being interested in Ricochet, trying to build up a new roster. Several wrestlers have given their notice to Impact, one of them being Rockstar Spud, and apparently WWE is interested in him into coming in for the Cruiserweight division that they're trying to build up for 205 Live. And I've also heard they're about ready to call up Hideo Itami to be on the Cruiserweight division.
Damn, they're getting stacked over in the Cruiserweight division right now, Brando.
Well, that's the case. They lost Neville. They lost Austin Aries, two really big guys. I know that's probably not the place where Austin Aries really wanted to be. However, I do think Austin Aries was trying to make the best of the situation.
Absolutely, and they fucked him.
Yeah.
He should have won his title at Mania. That would have been awesome.
Well, not only that, but the match should have been on the fucking DVD.
True. Also, did you know that Neville has been cut from 2K18, or was cut from 2K18 right before its release?
That is ridiculous.
They are. Well, and here's the other thing. We talked about a long list of releases. Neville's name is not one of them. They are not releasing Neville. They're going to fight to keep him in his contract. They're going to probably punish him monetarily until he's like, shit, I got to work for these guys. They're not going to let me go. I mean, he was a top guy. He was billed as a top guy and was building it up. They gave him the King Neville shtick for a hot minute, and then everything kind of fell to shit and fell by the wayside, and that's where we are now. In all of this, is Neville's unhappy, looking for other things? It seems like a lot of people are unhappy. It also seems that ROH is a cool place. I feel like I'm going to start watching more ROH programming, honestly.
Well, I mean, welcome, I guess, to 2004, Nate. ROH has always been really cool stuff to watch. I mean, I've watched it on and off throughout the years, saw early stuff of Samoa Joe, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson. And, of course, Low Key, Chris Daniels, so many guys. Homicide. Can't forget about Homicide over there. And then, of course, you have the Next Generation. You have your Kevin Steens.
Tyler Black.
Tyler Black, your El Generico's. That next class of crowd that are now all in WWE programming. But, and, of course, Austin Aries, you can't forget him as well with some of these great names that have come up throughout, the roster. And then, of course, most recently, Adam Cole is now in NXT.
Baby!
And I just got a text message.
Well, I'm going to...
Our good friend Joe Grimes.
Oh, Joe Grimes. He got some wrestle talk?
He does have a wrestle talk. That's pretty much the only thing he texts me about, really.
Sure, what's it say? Let's riff it here.
He says Bobby Roode has the most badass spine buster.
Dude, it's pretty pro looking. I mean, he's got it down better than I think even Triple H had it down, and I thought H had a hell of a spine buster for a while. But Bobby's is just so fluid.
Yeah, best spine buster in the business, though, in my opinion, always double A.
Arn, yeah.
There is no better spine buster. I mean, and Triple H emulated that spine buster. I mean, that was Arn's spine buster without a doubt. But there, like, to me, like, I'll never forget it. One of the most impactful spine busters probably ever. And it was on the biggest stage. It was WrestleMania 18, Ric Flair versus Undertaker. And Taker's beating up Flair. And out of nowhere, Arn Anderson comes out there. And Taker, I think Taker kind of hits him first and kind of takes him down. And then you think, that, oh, okay, Arn came in, but he got taken down. And then he goes back, and then he comes back. He's running. And all of a sudden, Arn grabs him. Boom! Spine buster. And the crowd popped so loud. Like, is that double A spine buster? Like, shit.
Still got it.
Fucking double A, like, nailed that spine buster on the Undertaker, and it was fucking awesome.
That was during Badass Undertaker, American yes. Badass era?
Well, it was the Big Evil, I guess you could say. It was the next step from American Badass. It was right before he went back to yeah. Dead Man, almost. But I was watching some old WCW. I was watching 1991 Halloween Havoc.
Cool.
And I was watching the tag team title defense between the Patriots, the U.S. tag champions, who were challenging the world tag team champions, the Enforcers.
Ooh.
Of course, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbyszko. And sitting there watching that, and it was a pretty standard tag match. I don't really think much of the Patriots. I don't even remember their names. I just remember the tag team name. And I'm like, wait, are they talking about Del Wilkes? I'm like, nope, not at all. Two other guys. Okay. Carry on. And for some reason, of course, the Patriots were the U.S. Tag Team Champions because America. And you had the Enforcers. And, I mean, both Arn and Larry were great workers in their own right. And I really feel like they are a underrated tag team because they were a damn good tag team. But then I remember just watching that match and see Arn hit that spine buster. It had been a long time since I'd seen. Maybe it's a long time since I actually paid attention to Arn in the ring. Because usually he's in there with somebody else. He's in there with somebody who's flashier, or somebody who's kind of taking your attention away from him, and he's making them look good, you know, like your Stings or like, you know, whoever. But he just happens to be in there with these guys that are really just, no offense to those guys, just not that great. But they're carrying enough. But you know, Larry and Arn are carrying these guys to a good match. And then I'm focusing in on the, like, on the heels, and I'm watching them work, and I see Arn hit that fucking spine buster, and I'm like, God damn, he was so fucking good.
Pro.
I like how, like, I really like how we just, like, went and nerded out about Arn Anderson, because thanks Joe for that, because that was a tangent that needed to happen on this show.
I totally agree with
Arn
that.
Anderson. Arn Anderson is one of the most underrated wrestlers in the history of the business.
What have you been watching, Dr. Dongo?
Yeah. In terms of, like, shows, just binge, mostly just I'm going through How I Met Your Mother again.
Solid.
That was my favorite show. It's, to this day, aside from that 70s show, it's my favorite show of all time. Because I watched that show premiere on TV, and then I watched it end. Like,
I did not watch it premiere, but I really got into it. I really liked it.
And it's so funny.
Mixed with the drama is perfect. It's perfect. It really makes you feel mm-hmm. sometimes.
Other than that, I try to watch documentaries on Netflix. The one I've loved the most recently is have you guys seen the movie Goon with Sean William Scott?
Have not.
The hockey movie.
No. I've heard about it, but not
and,
seen it.
Jay Baruchel and I think Eugene Levy's in it too. He plays the dad, but he's very minor role. But it's Sean William Scott, and it's about a guy who, like, really has nothing going for him in life. He's a bouncer at a bar, and like he's just super fucking tough, but he's got nothing, no other talents. So he's at a hockey game, and he's like one of the hockey players gets a penalty, gets to sit in the penalty box, and like the crowd's just sitting there talking shit to him, and then the hockey player basically runs out in the crowd, and Sean William Scott's like, "Hey, fuck you," and just beats the shit out of him. And then the coach sees this and offers him a spot on the team. And before long, he gets a like just below professional level hockey team position. And so it's about this guy who he's a goon. He's an enforcer, the official title,
which is most what hockey is, yeah. Honestly. So
he's on the team not to play hockey, but to go out and fight. He's there to get retribution for the things the refs don't call. And he's there to protect his team. He's there to get payback for what the fucking refs don't call. So he's there to fight. He's there to beat the shit out of the guy that fucks up.
Interesting.
And it's a funny movie. It's got a really nice drama element to it. It's a good movie. But this documentary, it's about like the real life enforcers and the people who just do nothing but fight in hockey. it's about that whole lifestyle. It's about like the stigma behind it. Like, oh, there's too much fighting in hockey, and oh, there's all these concussions in hockey. And it's like, and they did a study, and it's like, all of the concussions are from non-fighting related incidents. Like 90% of the
they really doled down the fighting in hockey. I feel like,
and they went into it further and said if it wasn't for the padding, like they have like super padding to where you don't feel any impacts
right
on yourself. So because of that, people are more aggressive. People that back in the day, they weren't as aggressive because you could feel that shit. You didn't want to fucking nail a guy at fucking 30 miles
an hour. It's going to hurt you just as much.
Yeah, so they think it's because the padding's so much more superior and hits so much harder that people are getting hurt so much more these days. And it's a really cool look.
But if it's not from the fighting, let them fight.
Yeah.
But
that's the thing. It's such a violent... Because of the fighting, it's extra violent, and of course people are gonna look into that, and of course it's the fighting that's causing the concussions. Of course it's the, I mean it's causing a lot of shit, but concussions is very rare for that. You get a concussion from your brain shaking in your skull,
right? Not from getting punched a couple times.
That happens from your body jolting,
right?
Whiplash.
Yeah, whiplash. Your body, you just fucking get knocked, fucking. Senseless, not from getting punched in the face.
I've had one concussion. I got hit in the temple with a baseball being pitched at me. So I mean that one hit me pretty good.
Yeah.
And that was in a pretty tender spot. So that one was pretty bad, and I could see where they come from. But I mean, getting punched a couple times, like let them hit each other a couple times, then break it up. Like don't break it up instantly.
Your brain isn't sitting snug inside your skull. Nope. There is some space between your skull and your brain. With some brain fluid and whatnot. So, like, there's room for your fucking brain to bounce around in there if it happens. And that's where the concussion comes from. A lot of people don't know that. But, yeah, it's an excellent documentary. And, of course, it goes into the lifestyle and, like, what the people think of it. And, like, how... Like, there's this one big-ass burly dude with this giant beard, and he just... You could tell he lived for it. He's like... Oh yeah, I went in there and I'd fuck him up. It's like, and they'd go into like the rituals, like what they would do before a game, and how they would toughen themselves up. Like that same guy, he talked about he literally demonstrated. He wrapped a chain around his like a fucking big ass like big ass lynx chain around his knuckles, and he's like, I'd wrap this around my hand, and I'd just go out and punch trees.
How does that condition you? I feel like it's just going to hurt your hands
it calluses your fucking knuckles and shit.
I guess I don't have that pain tolerance.
It calluses your knuckles, but and so calloused knuckles, you're not going to feel it as much when you're hitting somebody, when you're hitting skin. Obviously, if you're hitting a tree,
right,
you're going to fucking feel it more, but skin and bone contact, Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's a great documentary. I can't remember what it's called at the moment, but if
you'll
I
have
find
to find
it,
out, let me know.
Yeah.
I just watched a documentary on HBO about Steven Spielberg.
Oh, yeah?
Called Spielberg.
Nice.
And it just kind of goes through his whole life and all the movies he did. And I did not realize how many really, really awesome movies Steven Spielberg did.
Almost obscure, though. Like, you would not expect Steven Spielberg to be directing those movies.
He's done it all.
Yeah.
He's done every style of movie you can imagine.
Real quick. I've noticed his name on things.
Real quick, the documentary is called Ice Guardians. It's good stuff.
Ice Guardians.
Good stuff. Anyway.
Well, yeah, Spielberg. Real good. He was apparently the one who, he didn't coin the term, but he created the term blockbuster.
Nice.
When he made Jaws.
When he made Jaws, I've known Jaws to be called the first blockbuster.
Yep. And it was just a movie that was just insanely popular that no one knew what to do with it. And then he did, what is it? Encounters of the Third Kind or something weird. Something like that.
Yeah.
And then E.T., Indiana Jones, Schindler's List. Everything.
He did Schindler's List?
There's a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
There's a lot.
Yeah. He's crazy. He's done so much stuff. A lot of stuff that I really like. I didn't realize how bad people thought the Temple of Doom was. Apparently, like, looking back on it, I can see people's perspective, how it might be insensitive.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So I don't know if I can...
I've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Last Crusade in recent years.
Good luck.
Hey, Brandon, let me smash. Joanna will get that. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay.
I didn't, something about smash. I meant the lost here.
Let me smash. I'll show you the video.
Okay. If you have the Wii U accessory for the GameCube controller adapter, plug that into your USB port on your system.
Yeah.
Or on your dock, I should say.
Yeah.
And you'll be ready to go. In fact, you should be able to play most games with that controller.
Yep.
So if you have an old school GameCube controller, one of the newer ones that they created for the Smash series when they re-put them out, you're in luck. I think that's really cool, and I think that's really telling that it's probably coming, and they're going to be making more of those.
Telegraph.
Yeah. But that came in the update in 4.0.0. Another thing that they did for that was they extended the length of time which you could record a clip, which is still pretty short, considering it's like 30 seconds and like a minute or something like that. But they plan on doing more, but they don't ever want first-party Nintendo games. They're still being stingy.
That's Nintendo, though.
So the last thing we're going to talk about, or the last thing that's really on the docket for today, they mentioned this at E3.
Yes.
And now it's here.
It's here.
Xbox Original.
OG.
Games are now playable. They're now announced, and they're here for the Xbox One with 1080p resolution and better frame rates and loading times. Microsoft has revealed the first 13 backwards compatible Xbox games for Xbox One, all the 13 were available on October 24th. So if you're listening to this, it's been about a week or so ago or whatever. And all are enhanced with 1080p resolution, higher and/or smoother frame rates and faster loading times. Here are the first 13 games you can play on any Xbox One if you own the title.
Right.
Or you can buy it from the store for $10.
Right.
Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
That's a big one.
Boom. Ninja Gaiden Black. Yeah. Crimson Skies, High Road to Revenge.
That is the that's an exclusive Xbox.
Yeah.
Really fun. That's like that's where you know, during that era where we haven't had a good Star Fox game in a long time.
Yeah.
There it is. Almost good Star Fox game right there. Fusion Frenzy.
You got it?
Yes, that is a Xbox exclusive. It's like a mini game fest, or it's like a, some sort of a game show type thing. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time.
It's a good game.
Yeah. Psychonauts. Dead to Rights.
Mm.
Black.
Yeah.
Grab by the Ghoulies.
I've never heard of that one.
Huh?
I've never heard of that one.
Grab by the Ghoulies. That was made by Rare.
Rare
did, they did Banjo-Kazooie, they did GoldenEye, and they did a Perfect Dark. Grab by the Ghoulies was one of the first games they did on the Xbox after they got bought.
Huh.
Sid Meier's Pirates. Red Faction 2.
There's a good one.
Blood Rain 2.
That's a good one.
And the King of Fires. King of Fighters. Neowave.
That was okay.
If you have your original Xbox disc, just insert it into the console. If you own it digitally, like if you owned it like on your Microsoft account, that'll also work. Many of these games can also be purchased from the store in digital form for $10. And then there's a comparison video. For titles that support System Link multiplayer, it still works.
Really?
Even across...
You know what I'm surprised about on this? And all this that you just said... Where are my Halo titles? I think the reason why they left them out, Halo Anniversary.
Master Chief Collection.
Master Chief Collection.
It's all there. So you don't need Halo 1 or 2 because you can get those on the Xbox One.
Yes.
That's why they didn't do it. It's got to be. Why shoot yourself in the foot like that, I guess.
Pretty much.
Anyway, let's get back to the article. This is from IGN. It says, for titles that support the System Link, it still works. I got a four-player round of Crimson Skies with me on the original Xbox, another person on an Xbox One X, another person on an Xbox One S, and a fourth on a launch Xbox One. Online multiplayer is not supported. However, as servers for the original Xbox games were shut down a long time ago. So, across four different Xboxes.
That's awesome. It's
you
awesome.
Got Crimson Skies. That is crazy. They system linked all those together, and it worked.
I tell you what, back in the day, System Link was the shit. When I was deployed, we had a spider web of Ethernet cables. Mm-hmm. Literally every tent, everybody had an Xbox and a TV. So we had just a spider web of just Ethernet all hanging over our tents, going down and everywhere, because we slept in like 20 to 30 man tents.
Yeah.
That's all we had. They were everywhere. And we actually got yelled at a couple times for it. We're like, we don't even care. that's what we do our pastime. We're in a foreign country getting shot at every day. We can do this.
And now you're like connecting on playing like multiplayer Halo and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. So Halo 2.
Yeah, Halo 2.
I used to dominate that.
I never did it myself, but I saw our good friend and fellow host here on the Journey to Comics Network, Nate. Yeah, he had a LAN party at his house once, and I got to see that. So, I brought this game. I brought Knights of the Old Republic because yesterday I got home, and I threw this in. And what you got to do is nothing came up when I put it in. I was like, "What's going on here?" I went into my game and apps. I don't know if it just took a while. It might have just taken a while. But I went into my game and apps, and it said in queue, one. So I went to my queue, and it's like, to play this, you need to download a free update. The free update's the game.
Right.
It's like just under 5 gigabytes for this game.
Right.
It loads up, downloads, does all that stuff. And then you click on the play, right?
Yeah.
And it goes, it does the old school Xbox startup, system startup. Wah, 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 wah. And then it goes into the game. And it loads it up. The only thing that I will critique, at least what I saw on Knights of the Old Republic, the character models look good. Everything looks good. The pictures that they have set up for the equipment and for your character models, they were up-rest.
Yeah.
So they look like crap. Doggy, we're trying to talk about Knights of the Old Republic.
That's my dog meat guarding the house.
Yeah.
This is my settlement.
Yeah, from what?
from the guy mowing the lawn across the street.
Shake fist. So, Nazi Old Republic, I tell you what, as soon as I saw this article a few days ago, like, I flipped my shit.
Right.
Because when I saw that Kotar was on there, my disc likes to freeze up and not work.
Right.
I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Because you downloaded it online first, so you know you got a good copy. All you're there reading is your certification code. Yeah,
exactly. That's all it is. The Xbox Live stuff does not work. They've remapped the black button to the right bumper, white button to the left bumper. So just know that. It's not going to tell you that. You have to figure that out yourself. So just know that's where the buttons have been moved to. It's true emulation of that, because when you play a 360 game on there, it'll launch into 360 mode.
Right.
When you press the home button, it'll bring up the 360 menu. And then you have to completely exit out of 360 mode to kind of really get back to your Xbox stuff.
Right.
One stuff. With this, it's Xbox One menu. It's all that stuff. It's very smooth. The game did freeze on me when I was typing my name in. So it's straight up KOTAR. That's kind of how that game is sometimes. I'm not saying that KOTAR is void of bugs or problems. It definitely is. It's a RPG in the early 2000s. Bethesda, king of the bugs. And, you know, this game is not void of it. But a name on dude, James Kirk, as a joke. But what I brought with me are five games from my collection.
Should be on there.
That I think should be backwards compatible. And you could easily say the Grand Theft Auto trilogy.
Yeah.
Because those three games are on the PS4. I tried to grab things I knew were not, or maybe one of them might be, but that I knew would not be on the PS4, PS2 collection type thing, right?
Right.
The Grand Theft Auto trilogy, 3, Vice City, San Andreas, absolutely. You have those discs, you should be able to play those.
Right.
You know, 100%. Hitman, Silent Assassin, Hitman 2, I love that game. Absolutely. There's plenty of games I didn't bring, but these are the ones I just thought about. First of all, another BioWare hit, Jade Empire. Absolutely. This one falls under the radar. This came in between Knights of the Old Republic and Mass Effect. And, I mean, this thing is heavy.
Yeah, there's a lot of discs in there.
Well, I mean, it's actually only two discs. It's the damn manual.
Oh, the manual's like shit. Yeah, it is. And it shows you all their moves,
mm-hmm.
fighting styles.
Oh, yeah, dude. I love this game. When I got my Xbox, KOTAR is what got me to get an Xbox. Rob told me, you got to play this game. And I'm like, I don't want to buy an Xbox. He goes, I'll let you borrow mine. So I borrowed his Xbox, and KOTAR fell in love. Fell in love with that game. KOTAR is in my top 10. Easy.
Right.
Easy top 10. Yeah, right up there. It's in that same mindset with me with like FF9. Those right. games at some point could easily bleed into my top five. But when people ask me, what are your top five video games ever? And I start like, well, FF7. And I'm like, I could easily go FF9 next.
Right.
But I don't want to. It's like, I don't want to stay like, okay, well then what, if I'm not going to pick an FF, where would I go for number two? Chrono Trigger. Okay, what's next? Mass Effect 2. What's next? I could easily say Mass Effect 1 or 3. But I don't want to, because I want to, like, okay, let's get away from, keep saying the same ones.
Right.
Okay, then Metal Gear Solid 3. And I could easily, once again, do MGS1. But I'm like, well, then if I'm not going to pick another Metal Gear, it'll just Link to the Past.
Yeah.
You know? And then after that, it's like, well, then what next? A KOTAR or a FF9 or whatever, RE2. You know, and these big long list of games that I just think are amazing. Jade Empire may not be in my top 10, but it's pretty high. It is definitely, they take the KOTAR engine and they take it to the next level. It's a little bit more action based.
Right.
It's set in like ancient China. So you have that sort of mythos in there. But it's definitely underlooked for sure. The next one, you know it. I know it.
X-Men
Legends. And I easily could brought X-Men Legends 2, but let's get both of them on there. X-Men Legends, fun, awesome.
Yes.
Local, even maybe LAN connection. I don't think this has that.
No, it does not have System Link on here, so you can't do that. But do this game displayed in 720p?
Huh. Back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day. 2004 when this game came out. But if you can get four players on one Xbox playing this game, and on one Xbox One, that'd be fun.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Easy one. I picked KOTAR 2.
You have KOTAR 1, you got to have KOTAR 2.
You're listening to the Voice of Survival Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Nate Phillips.
I remember my first concert. I think I was 5, and it was John Hyatt at Ravinia Center.
That was interesting.
But I wasn't really grabbed by it, really. After I had a large Beatles obsession, the next time I really got into music was right around the time I had taken piano lessons with Sarah. I was around 12 years old, and I started to get into Marilyn Manson and kind of the goth rock sort of genre, and I really appreciated the performance aspect of music, and I thought that that was a really interesting thing, and I decided that I wanted my life to somehow be involved with music.
I think you've done a great job of doing that and seeing your evolution as a person. Like, good thing about Voice of Survival is we can jump around in your story a little bit. It's super interesting because you have a really prominent part in my story of music, in my new journey of music, because you were really a part of my first show. You know, I had been out of the game of music for a couple of years, had not performed, and it just so happened that the first time Walk Among Us played, we played alongside of you guys.
Yeah, that was a really fun show. Wasn't it at Big Shots in Valparaiso?
Yeah. And that was a crazy night. You know, it's just that you think it's just like this person who, again, I've known you since you were a younger dude, so the evolution of you as a person is interesting, because I do remember when you were younger and into getting into Marilyn Manson, and Sarah just said she had this student who craved the music knowledge and wanted it, you know, at the highest level.
Not necessarily that I practiced enough, but
no, but you just had the drive that you wanted to be doing music somehow.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's the most important thing. It doesn't always mean, you know, as a musician. Trust me, there are a lot of bad musicians out there who don't practice, who are very famous. There are also great musicians who practice every day, who no one knows. So practice doesn't necessarily make everything. It's sometimes just the drive and will to do music at a level.
And that's definitely a very big part of it. I mean, a lot of the musicians that I'm personally into now are musicians that people rarely hear of or don't hear of at all.
Yeah, and that's another interesting quality about you. I feel like you, like, changed your mental level of, like, what you wanted out of music, because it was, like, one thing with the kind of the Marilyn Manson style of music, and then now where you are in your band Belladonna. So, like, we're going to fill this gap in here and kind of better to understand what is the journey between your becoming a teenager to where you are now. Like, musically speaking, I know that's not like a huge amount of time, but what has caused you or helped you to evolve musically to the point where you make the kind of music you make now, and you strive to learn and do different things and experiment with different sounds and stuff? I mean, you play a didgeridoo sometimes. It's incredible.
Why, thank you.
I mean, no, like, literally no other band do I know have I ever been able to say, like, someone in their band can play a didgeridoo.
Well, I would have to attribute the evolution of music in for me to art, and in the visual sense, art is was a very large part of my childhood. I grew up going to galleries, and I understood visual art better than I did really anything else, like musically or otherwise. I understood the concept of modern art at a fairly young age, and the concept of visual art is very similar to the concept of music that I've come to slowly realize that there's art that only there's music that only musicians can really appreciate, and then there's music that is marketable to the masses and it's not really that great in quality. And it's the same goes for art, visual art, where there's the modern art where nobody really understands why there's a single dot on a canvas, but the other artists do. And that's why they make it for the other artists, which is, I guess, a little bit conceited, but it has its own value. And the value of art is what people are willing to pay for it. So
correct, and it's art is definitely one of those in the eye of the beholder type thing.
Definitely,
like you could have, you know, three splotches of red paint on a blue canvas sell for like $48 million because one person loves those two colors so much.
Yes.
And that's the only reason. And that might be the worst piece of art ever made. You know?
There was actually an artist that took a shit in a can and sealed it and sold it for millions of dollars.
Wow.
Yeah, that's an actual true story. So.
Wow, I'm going to have to...
Yeah, I'm not sure about the details of it, but that did happen.
Oh, God, people are gross.
Yeah.
I want to kind of jump now to... We're still building you as this young person coming up. I was a part of what I think was maybe the first step in the evolution of Neil.
Oh, yes.
Because... fate mixed with circumstance mixed with like every kind of other fucking thing possible brings a situation together where a lot of this can be recounted on episode one of The Voice of Survival, where Sarah was my guest and she definitely detailed like a lot of the meeting, but we're going to definitely get your perspective on it. So Sarah does this, you know, piano rendition of Darkness Within by Machine Head. The band likes it. They tweet it, blah, blah, blah. We end up meeting them. The student that she was talking about on that episode that got to go backstage and meet this band was you.
Yeah.
Who also had seen and heard Machine Head for the first time that day.
Well, here's another interesting fact. That was really my second concert that I... Well, no, that's not true. That was the second of my obsessive concerts going to. My first would have been Marilyn Manson early in 2012.
Sweet.
I saw him, and then after that I was sitting at my dad's girlfriend's house in Tinley Park, and Sarah was telling me that she was going to Machine Head the next day, and I was living in Tinley Park at the time, and the show was happening in Tinley Park, so I was like, hey dad, can we go? And I begged him, and I had to do a bunch of chores to be able to go. And then we finally went, and that was really my first exposure to a festival setting, I'd say. And
yeah.
That really, really grabbed my mind, and we got to meet Machine Head, and that was such a surreal experience.
Good evening, and welcome to the second episode of Brews with Dudes. I'm your host, Nick Maxson, and I got a couple dudes here with me.
Get that shit.
Ooh, that's dark.
Now, what one is this?
This is Redankulous.
Oh, this is yours.
Let me see that bottle real quick. Thank you, sir. Yeah, this is Redankulous by Founders. It's an Imperial Red Indian Pale Ale. It is 9.5% alcohol.
Ooh.
By volume. 90 IBUs. I didn't check this stuff before I bought it. I saw the name.
You just grabbed it.
I saw the name and I grabbed it because I was pressed for time.
Didn't even get it cold.
Nope, didn't even get it cold. It's cold
but
now.
But it is cold.
Or at least the bottle feels cold.
Yeah, it's this, pretty cold now.
Let's read this.
It is chilled.
Bold, 9.5% Imperial Red IPA pours a pleasing burnt amber color. Caramel.
I brought in a glass of water with me.
There's the caramel caramel debate.
I think
but
I might
what
have
about caramel?
Left it in the car.
and roasted barley introduce a subtle sweetness, but the hops are the true headliner in this big IPA. The spicy, piney, and tropical complexities of Chinook, Mosaic, and Simcoe hops hit you right away with their dank aroma. And they stick around. It's not just ridiculous, it's redanculous.
Yeah, they're talking this up quite a bit. Let's check this out.
Let me swish. Oh, it's got a kind of...
That's got a very heavy
scent. Heavy, definitely heavy.
Scent.
It's red. It smells and it tastes red.
I don't think I'm going to like this.
It is an imperial red. I don't think you are red. Either.
Yeah.
So can I make a prediction? Dr. Dongo is not going to like
it's
this.
It's definitely
beer.
Got a bitter aftertaste.
The smell is not
that excites me. Right. I love a good bitter beer.
It's very dank.
It's not bad.
I've smelled a beer like this before. I can't remember what it was, but
that is actually smoother than what I'd expect out of an imperial red IPA.
Luckily, the last time I smelled this,
it's pretty
I was
heavy
really
though.
Already pretty fucked up.
90 IBUs.
And I can handle it.
Oh, man. Fucking ISIS. I got a whiff of it.
Oh, yeah. ISIS.
ISIS just dropped a terror bomb.
Doggy fart.
I'm going in, guys. Going in.
It's a little much for me, I think.
Yeah.
I got to say, this is actually smoother than what I expected out of an Imperial Red.
Yeah, it's really Absolutely. Smooth. I don't like the taste. I would have to already be pretty far gone to
Lapsapadoy.
Appreciate it.
To not appreciate it, but handle it.
This actually falls back into my earlier years when I was really getting into craft beers, because I really went heavy into the bitter, hoppy beers. Like the stronger and bitter and hoppier it was, the more I drank it.
This is very, very bitter.
And this is right up my nostalgia alley right here. This is really good.
So when would you say you started drinking craft beer or beer that wasn't the big commercially brewed ones?
I got to say, I really started getting into the craft beer and not commercial, more of the...
Beer made with love.
Yeah, the lovely beer that's made by a small brewery. I don't know. Say about 6-7 years ago, I've been getting into them, and I started off with Peoples to be my first like small brewery beer, and I just started going through what they had back then. And I remember when I was first getting into it, like most of the IPAs and stuff that I really enjoyed, it was very, very flowery and very forward with this, you know, hoppy, just the flowery side of the hoppy taste, and I didn't start really tasting the underlying flavors and the bitterness of it until I started to, you know, train my palate into it. But when I first was taking it in, I got the hoppy, and then I'd get a little bit of the fruit scents that really did it for me.
Peoples, for the longest time to me, had a lot of what I considered the same styles, but I feel like lately, in the past year or so, it put out a lot of different kind of styles that I really like.
I need to try these things, because unpopular opinion, I'm not a fan of Peoples.
I generally wasn't either.
Ooh, it depends on what you're drinking, I guess.
Yeah,
I've had
not a fan of like, let's say, Mr. Brown.
Me neither.
Farmer's Daughter. I think is
Farmer's
an excellent daughter.
Is the
excellent
closest beer. That I can get to liking it.
I've got to say it's maybe 4 or 5 beers that I would recommend that you would enjoy from Peoples, aside from their normal Mr. Brown, Mound Builder.
Mound Builder's, it's
Hop
decent.
Killer.
But
Hop Killer's a good one.
Hop Killer.
I like the Boiler Gold. They just came out with a beer for Purdue University.
Actually, nice. That is a Purdue University brewed beer called Boiler Gold.
Peoples helped with it, or they brewed it at Peoples. Peoples
they
has something
it,
to do with it.
They brewed it at Peoples, but it is a
Either
Purdue
way,
University
that's really cool that they're doing that at Purdue.
Only.
Apparently, they've had a relationship for a while now.
That's really neat.
Where they work on hops together.
I'm not a fan of Redanculous.
I'm not going to give it. This is.
I'm not a fan either.
This is not my favorite that we've done today. I mean, I don't think I would buy it again. I would accept it. If someone offered me this or a shitty beer, I'd probably accept this.
Unless it was Pabst.
You know, I'm a big fan of Pabst, but
I can get Pabst any time. But if somebody offers me this, saying here is a good beer for you, because
this is probably a
I'm gonna go ahead and accept
$3 beer, $2 or $3 beer. So it's good enough to drink again. I'm probably not gonna buy it.
Yeah, no, I won't.
Also, if I may, this was bottled in May, so I don't know what kind of I don't know what that will play into it.
It is. This actually has a most Imperials have a decent shelf life.
So that's what. Yeah, that's why I'm saying I don't really know how much of an effect it'll play. I can just say definitively that it was brewed 5 months ago. So,
well, it was bottled on 5/30 of 17, so it's not quite 5 months.
Which for, I think in for most beers, that's pretty long. You don't really want shit to sit around that long.
No,
but.
So, I'm going to give the thumbs down, Dr. Dongo.
I agree.
You didn't do very good.
Next time.
I didn't do very good.
Next time, don't be late and pick a good beer.
Right, right.
Well, the thing is, I'm very inexperienced in terms of this.
That's. So, I want to give you the credit. I will give you the credit picked a very...
reputable company.
You picked a great company, a great brewery, and you picked something that I don't know why you picked this. I would not have guessed that you would pick this.
See, I was
it's such a strong beer.
I was at the liquor
like
store.
That.
I was at the liquor store, and I was trying to. At first, I was looking for something that I would want to try. So I was looking at the Three Floyd stuff that I hadn't tried, but I was like, "No, I want to pick something that nobody there's gotten." So
never had it.
Yeah. So I figured, okay, if I pick something Three Floyd. More than likely, you guys have had it.
That was the goal. I believe that's what we've said to everyone. If you're going to bring a beer, bring something you think no one's tried yet, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to drink new beer. And,
yes.
Well, next time I'm bringing Stroh's.
Hey, Dongo, let me shoot you a suggestion while picking out beer since you were newer to it.
This is my journey into beer.
When you're prepping, go ahead and start going out like tonight if you have time, or tomorrow to. Go ahead and give your time to shop around in beers and read the labels and see what they
have.
That's
what I was trying to do as well. I just didn't. I saw Founders and I'm like, okay, I can get behind that for sure.
I already have a beer for next week.
Oh.
Is it the one you told me you were going to bring this week?
No, it is not. It is one specifically brewed to be enjoyed by October 31st of 17.
So we're going to try to have a super special Halloween edition. So.
Oh, boy.
We'll see how that goes. Quickly, while we've got the moment, I want to say thank you to the 250-plus people who have liked the Brews with Dudes page before a single episode came out.
That's impressive. Yeah, I saw you announce that, and hats off, man. I'm happy to be a part of the first two episodes. I'm happy that you're part of the Journey into Comics Network.
Then me too. I love
250 of you should be sharing this page.
Yeah. Absolutely. Imagine if that happened. Mm. No one realizes, like even if you don't drink good beer, I bet you've got a friend on your page likes good beer. So just share it and just say, hey, some friends of mine are trying new, really good beers every week, trying to just taste a little bit of everything. So.
Even if not everybody thinks they're really good. I've got to give this Redanculous a... solid thumbs up on my half.
I'm glad you like
it. I think that's why I like the idea of having multiple people and we're not trying to stroke anybody's ego. It's like, we don't like the beer, then we don't like the beer. And that's why I like explaining the IBUs and explaining the color and saying what it tastes like. We're trying to paint four different perspectives of the same beer so you can decide if you like it yourself. But yeah, I mean we kind of went into it last week, like I've done a couple podcasts with Nate and Brando and Dongo, and after just doing it once or twice, I loved it. And then they were all like, dude, you should do a podcast of your own. Like, just do something. So I'm glad we landed on something like this.
I'm definitely glad this is one more thing on top of the mountain of things that you have your hands in.
Right. Having an one time a week that's organized around drinking beer. Usually it's like, we're going to get together and listen to bands play. But it's like, we always are like, well, we're also just going to drink a bunch of beer while we do that. Like,
we're always talking about the beer while we do it.
Yeah. So now we've got a very focused, you know, we got 1 hour that we're focusing hard on just drinking beer and talking about beer.